This is the Morrow Midday Show.
WTMZ 98.9 FM, WTMZ 910 AM, and 94.7 FM, W234CD, Dorchester Terrace, Brentwood, Charleston.
Back again. CD's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 For my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
From it's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio on a football Friday as we get ready for Halloween. The Morrow Midday Show brought to you by Baker Roofing. They have been in business for over 100 years, and they're one of the largest, most recognized roofing contractors in the U.S. Baker Roofing provides residential and commercial roofing, and they were founded all the way back in 1915 with the promise of always good work. So give our friend Matt Johnson, general manager of Baker Roofing Charleston, a call, or head on over to bakerroofing.com for more information. You can also check out their incredible history and see all the different roofing types that are available online at bakerroofing.com. Over 100 years of always good work, Baker Roofing, bringing you the Morrow Midday Show each and every day. I have always complained about a lack of Halloween music. This, of course, is the iconic one, hence the reason we've used it for each hour. But as I shared earlier this week, I watched the new Halloween movie, you know, Michael Myers. It's titled Halloween Kills. It actually debuted because the production company is here in Charleston. They filmed the last one in Charleston. This was filmed in North Carolina, actually. They filmed this one in North Carolina. Jamie Lee Curtis and everybody. But the reason why I bring it up is because the movie was pretty awful. I was very disappointed. It's one of the worst in the Halloween film series. But there was a song that I've been playing this week that is a great Halloween song. So if you're looking for more Halloween songs, we've been playing a bunch throughout the afternoon. But let me also recommend Stop, Look, and Listen, It's Halloween. Yes, that's the name of the song. It's a little lengthy. Stop, Look, and Listen, It's Halloween by Pete Antel, used in that movie. It's the best part of the movie. If you haven't seen the movie and you like scary films, you could probably skip that one. If you have seen the movie, then you know the only good part about the film were the characters Big John and Little John. I would watch another movie with just those guys. They're great. Two good comedy actors, Scott MacArthur and Michael McDonald. Real funny dudes. And that was the best part of the movie. So if you've seen Halloween Kills, you know what I'm talking about. If you haven't seen it and you're not into scary films, then you have no idea what I'm talking about. That's okay, too. Usually people don't know what I'm talking about. All right. Here it is. Nicely produced. Stop, Look, and Listen. It's Halloween by Pete Antel.
The goblins
throw this onto your Halloween playlist.
To take you and shake you until you shout. Stop, look, and listen. It's Halloween.
This will be playing while I'll be watching the Cowboys-Vikings Sunday night on Halloween.
Stirring up the potions.
Looking for the trick-or-treaters.
Stop,
and playing a little Pete Antel. Stop, Look, and Listen. It's Halloween. So that's right up there, too, now, is one of my new favorite Halloween songs. We need more Halloween music. I've never heard this song, but they used it in that movie. And I have to admit, I've been listening to it throughout the week. That's a good one. We'll preview all of the NFL games coming up as we do every Friday on a Football Friday to get ready for, in this case, Week 8 of the NFL season. And we'll do it in just a moment. You can always join the conversation. Let's first go to the phones, 843-721-9500. Chris is with us. Chris, what's going on? How are you?
Good. How are you doing, Luke?
Doing well. What's up?
Just got two questions for you that I'm going to hang up and listen.
Sure.
One, what do you think the Braves need to do not only to win tonight, but to win the World Series? And my second question is, what's your favorite Halloween candy?
What was that, favorite Halloween movie or candy?
Candy.
Appreciate it. Two good questions. I put them on the same level playing field here. We got a World Series going on, but I'm thinking just as much about candy. I got to be honest. I'm a little old school because I think it's considered more of an older person candy, if that is such a thing. But I've always been an Almond Joy guy. And Mounds. More so Mounds that have gotten older. When I was younger, it was all about Almond Joy. They're very similar, right? There's just the Mounds doesn't have the nut, and Mounds is dark chocolate. And that's the difference. I loved Almond Joy growing up. And Almond Joy is my mother's favorite candy as well, so I think that had to do with it. But I loved Almond Joys growing up. And as I've gotten older, I appreciate dark chocolate even more. So Mounds. Now, when you would go out trick-or-treating, you didn't get too many Almond Joys and Mounds. But that was always my favorite chocolate as a kid. And I'm probably an outlier. I think you could ask 100 people. I don't know how many people would tell you that Almond Joy is their favorite candy. I feel like that's more of an older, you know, you ask adults, I feel like they are more into the Almond Joys and Mounds. For whatever reason, I feel like that's something you get into as you get older. When you want to get to the classics, outside of Almond Joy and Mounds, those are my favorites, but I knew going in, yeah, probably not going to get a ton of those. So I would always hope for, I was a big Kit Kat guy, trick-or-treating, and then, of course, you can't go wrong with Reese's. I'll give you the most underrated candy, though. Somebody put out a fake list. They were just making fun of the coaches of the ACC, and they put out a fake list of their favorite chocolates or favorite candies. So, for example, you know, Dabo, it was payday because, of course, he's the highest paid coach. It was just, you know, poking fun at the coaches. Well, Dave Clawson saw this on Twitter, and he responded and said false because they said for Dave Clawson, the head coach of Wake Forest, I think they said nerds. I don't know. Or nerds for one of the analytical coaches. I don't remember which one. But Dave Clawson said false, and he responded and said his favorite chocolate is Mallow Cup. I had no idea what this was until about 2 weeks ago. And we stopped at a gas station coming home from, I think it was the game against ETSU. And I'm like Pavlov's dog. When I go to a gas station, especially if I go inside, like I always have to get like some sort of chocolate. I got a real sweet tooth. It's a problem. And so I saw this at the register, and I thought, that looks interesting. I've never heard of this thing. So I got the Mallow Cup. It was delicious. Very similar to a Reese's, except it's got a whipped cream center. And that's the first time I ever heard of this candy and the first time I ever had it, and it was excellent. And I've thought about it since. And Dave Clawson tweeted yesterday that that's his favorite candy. I don't know how many people would say that. But the Mallow Cup, very good. I don't know if it's like a regional thing. I have never seen or heard of that candy before. That chocolate. I don't know if you call it candy. It's more of a, you know, chocolate. I think we keep those things separate. But yeah, that was delicious. That's an underrated one. But I'm an Almond Joy Mounds guy. When it comes to the Braves, all right, let's get back to something of more importance. When it comes to the Braves, it's going to come down to the pitching and if they can get things together. I think if I had to give you one player, I think it comes down to Max Fried. You don't have Charlie Morton. You have Ian Anderson going tonight. You hope he comes through for you. He's been so good in the playoffs, but he's never pitched in a World Series before, and he's only 23 years old. He's the youngest player on either roster in this World Series. He's the youngest guy in this World Series, and you're counting on him tonight. It helps that you're at home. He'll have the home crowd behind him. It'd be a lot more difficult in Houston. And the winner of Game 3, when a World Series is tied 1-1, they win the World Series two-thirds of the time. So this is a big game tonight, and you hope that your young kid, he's still technically a rookie, even though he pitched last year, you hope he comes through for you in the World Series. But I think Max Fried is the key to all of this, because I don't know what the Braves are going to do tomorrow or even Sunday if they're going to piece it together at the bullpen game. And then you go Max Fried either on short rest Game 5 Sunday or Game 6, but either way, you need him because you don't have Charlie Morton. Ian Anderson, we'll see how he pitches tonight. You could bring him back. If the series goes to 7, you're going to count on a bullpen game. But Fried was your guy. He led the league in ERA after the All-Star break. And he's been lousy in the playoffs. So you need him because with the lack without Charlie Morton, that's your horse now. But also because he hasn't pitched well his last 3 playoff starts, and you have to be able to count on him. So he needs to pitch well just to show he's capable of doing so, but also because they need that ace at some point in this series. Maybe it's Ian Anderson tonight. And especially when you talk about Houston, they're led by their lineup. Their pitching staff, I'm not impressed with that starting rotation. And we'll see Garcia tonight. He's been lousy in the playoffs outside of his last start when he added 4 miles per hour to his fastball. If he's throwing 97 again tonight, he'll be difficult. But on average, he was hitting 93 throughout the regular season. If he falls back to that, he was getting beat up in the postseason prior to his last start. He's also dealt with some knee issues this postseason. You know, you look at that starting rotation, and granted, the Astros really are missing their three best options, Greinke, Verlander, McCullers. So in Astros' defense, you know, they're down their three best starters. But they're starting a bunch of young guys who have been up and down in the postseason. They're all about their lineup. Scored the most runs in the league this year. And pitching, to me, still wins World Series. So for the Braves, it comes down to trying to figure out this pitching staff without Charlie Morton and without really a fourth starter. But more specifically, to zero in on one name, Max Fried. Now, we were going to get into the World Series later on, but since we're on the subject, let me continue. I would say for tonight specifically, or these games this weekend, a real key for the Braves. If I'm the Braves, I'm being real aggressive on the base paths tonight. I'm trying to take the extra base. Not so much trying to steal bases, because Maldonado is really good behind home plate. I wouldn't try to steal on him. I wouldn't want to run into those outs. But in terms of a base hit to the outfield, I'm going to try to go first to third. I'm going to try to score from second. I want to be really aggressive. And we know Ron Washington, right? It became a meme. It became a joke of him windmilling guys in against the Dodgers. I would be really aggressive on the bases. And I say that because the Astros are going to have all three outfielders playing out of position tonight. Now, one of them is Yordan Alvarez, who is fantastic at the plate. But there's a reason why in his career he's only played the outfield 43 times in 3 years. He's a DH 90% of the time. He'll be forced to play the outfield tonight because there is no DH, of course. This will be the case for the next three games. So Alvarez, I imagine, will be in left field. He's never played another position in the outfield other than left. So I imagine he'll be in left field. He's not good with the glove. There's a reason why he's a DH. So I'm going to try to take an extra base on him. And then for the Astros, you're going to lose Jose Siri, who, by the way, I was with in the minors. He was with us, one of the organizations I worked with. They say, if you have nothing nice to say, don't say anything at all. So that's all I'm going to say about Jose Siri. But he's going to, I imagine he'll be on the bench tonight. He's not going to play. And so then you move Michael Brantley, will probably play right field, which he never plays. And then center field, I imagine, I don't think they've released lineups yet. It's only 2 o'clock. This is my best guess. I imagine they put Kyle Tucker in center field, and he'll be out of position there. So if I'm the Braves tonight, I get real aggressive on the base paths. I try to steal an extra base every once in a while. Because the Astros, especially you go up against that lineup, you know the Astros, they could score some runs. So I'm going to try to keep pace. Base hit to left field, let's try to score them on a close play coming around second. You don't want to run into outs. You don't want to be stupidly aggressive. But if you have a chance, try to take that extra base. You hit one into the gap, think a double right out of the box. That has to be the mindset going in. When I have my pregame meeting, this is the point I'm making to my guys and telling them, hey, they got three outfielders all playing out of position tonight. When you hit a ball towards the gap, you get busted out of the box. Try to take a double. And it's not that Brantley and Tucker don't have bad arms or just because they're playing in a different position, their arms aren't as strong. But still, it's just a different way to track the baseball. It's just, you know, we're all creatures of habit, especially athletes. When you're used to playing left field, now you're in right field. The ball looks different coming off the bat. You're used to running in one direction, now you have to run the other. It's the little things. And in playoff baseball, it can come down to the little things. They're a half second too slow, it leads to you taking an extra base. So I expect Michael Brantley to play right field tonight. He's played right field 16 times in his 13-year career. I would guess he'll be the right fielder. Like I said, Alvarez will be the left fielder. He's played there 42 times in his whole big league career. And then Kyle Tucker, I imagine, will be in center field. He's played there 4 times his entire career. They're all outfielders, but they're going to be in different spots. And it doesn't sound like much moving from one outfield spot to another, but that can be a big change, a big adjustment for somebody, especially in a World Series game. So, to branch off of the original question, that to me is the key tonight. And maybe it doesn't come into play, but if you ever hit a ball into the outfield like that, think two out of the box. If you have a runner at second, you get a base hit. Look to score them on each opportunity. Don't force the issue, but just be a little aggressive tonight. This whole series, this whole weekend in Atlanta, when you have those fielders out there. And to try to win the World Series, I think it's still all about pitching in baseball these days. And for the Braves, specifically starting pitching. You have to get something out of Ian Anderson tonight. 23-year-old, it's a big spot for him. You hope he comes through. Figure out the next 2 days. If you win tonight, it makes it a little bit easier. If you got to go bullpen game tomorrow, or you got to throw Drew Smyly out there, right? You have a lead. You got a little bit of a buffer. You fall behind tonight 2-1. And now you don't have a starting pitcher to count on. You may have to bring Max Fried back on short rest Friday on Sunday. But then you're just trying to avoid being down 3-1 by that point. So Max Fried is huge, but now that I laid this all out,
I think I'm convincing myself that Ian Anderson's even bigger because the winner of Game 3, as I said, wins the series two-thirds of the time when the series is tied 1-1. And Anderson is the starter tonight in Game 3, and he's the youngest player in this series, 23-year-old in his first World Series game. So I think I just talked myself out of it. I think I'd actually say Ian Anderson is the key. You got to pitch well tonight and take a lead. If you go up 2-1, you could get a little creative the next 2 days with your pitching staff. You fall down 2-1, you become a little desperate, and it's not so easy to just throw out a bunch of relievers to rely on Drew Smyly potentially with your season on the line or whoever else you want to put out there. Tuki Toussaint, whoever else, Kyle Wright, whoever these other guys. It's a little bit easier when you have a lead to play with and do those things. So anyways, that's what I would have to say on the World Series tonight and moving forward. When we come back, we'll try to run through some of the games in the NFL this week, and we'll also catch up with somebody in about 15, 20 minutes who covers Florida State to preview that game with Clemson tomorrow. We got more to do here on this Football Friday. Before we go, also getting ready for Halloween as well. Hence the music throughout the afternoon.
Don't tell me you don't know this.
I do. I'm trying to place it. Is this Godzilla?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
For Blue Oyster Cult.
Yeah. Sounded familiar off the bat, and then I needed a moment to have it register. As we get ready for Halloween, we'll also get ready for Week 8 of the NFL and Clemson, Florida State. It's the Mar Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It's the Mar Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We'll look ahead to the games in the NFL here this weekend. Hey, don't forget that we have the 9th annual Cox vs. Tigers Golf Tournament coming up the day before Thanksgiving, Wednesday, November 24th. The links at Stono Ferry. Sign up today at Charleston Sports Radio. .com 36 teams and awards will be prizes will be awarded. I read whatever's on the paper. Prizes will be awarded is what I meant to say for all things that will be for things that will be going on at the golf tournament. Closest to the pin, longest drive, hole in one. Come dressed in your Carolina or Clemson gear, and every foursome that signs up gets the t-shirt for the golf tournament as well as complimentary beer and drinks plus lunch and a barbecue dinner. Trophies for first, second, and last place. November 24th, links at Stono Ferry, the day before Thanksgiving, the 9th annual Cox vs. Tigers Golf Tournament. Sign up today online at charlestonsportsradio.com. All right, every Friday we run through the games of the NFL schedule. Let's try to get through some of these as quickly as we can. We'll catch up with somebody who covers Florida State in about 10 minutes to preview that game. So in the meantime, let's try to get through some of these NFL games as we get ready for Week 8 of the NFL season.
Green Bay Packers at Arizona Cardinals.
This was the wild game last night. We opened the show with this. I think Aaron Rodgers is my MVP right now because I still view that award as the most valuable. Is he putting up the best numbers? Is he playing the best? No, but this Packers team is a 500 team masquerading as a first-place best record in the NFL team right now. And Rodgers is the only quarterback to ever travel two time zones on a short week and win. He's now done it twice. He's 7-0 without Devontae Adams in his career, 120 quarterback rating, and he's won 10 straight on primetime, a longest streak there for a quarterback in over a decade. Last night was a big-time win to knock off the undefeated Cardinals on a short week on the road. This is a 500 team that only has one loss because, strictly, Aaron Rodgers.
Pittsburgh Steelers at Cleveland Browns.
I'm not sure who will start for the Cleveland Browns. If it's Baker Mayfield, even if he's injured, this is a big spot for him. Case Keenum beat the Broncos last week. Doesn't look great on Mayfield. You never want your replacement to, you know, fill your shoes. And now you go up against the Steelers and Ben Roethlisberger, who is not the same quarterback. He's a washed-up, 39-year-old, banged-up quarterback. If you're Cleveland, you're at home. You can't lose this one. With that said, much like Dan Mullen, what do I always say? Mike Tomlin, he's great as an underdog. They're a four-point dog in the division against Cleveland, a team that historically Pittsburgh has dominated. I know this is not your father's Browns, but this is the type of moment. Banged-up quarterback, you're going on the road if you're the Steelers. You know, this rivalry game, this is where Tomlin surprises a lot of people. If you're Baker Mayfield and you're playing out there on Sunday, you got to play well enough against Roethlisberger and to keep the Browns fans from continuing to call for Case Keenum at this point.
Miami Dolphins at Buffalo Bills.
So Tua has played well the last 2 weeks as he seems to be playing for his job. Even though the Dolphins haven't won, Tua's done his part outside of a couple of costly turnovers. Well, now he goes to Buffalo. I don't know what the weather's going to be like Sunday. In fact, I see it here. It says 55 degrees and rainy. So not ideal. You got a Miami team going to upstate New York, and Tua is going up against the Bills, who are off a bye week, so they've had 2 weeks to get ready. They've played Tua before. They know him and this offense. And also, the Bills have allowed the second fewest points in the league, even after that game against the Titans. So this is a real test for Tua. He's played well against Jacksonville and Atlanta. Now let's see how he does on the road against the Bills when they have 2 weeks to prepare. And Tua, the trade deadline is coming up on Tuesday. So this is like a last-ditch effort. I don't think anything's going to happen at this point, not here during the season. But still, from this point forward, Tua's continuing to play for his job in Miami. If you could go and play well in Buffalo, that could go a long way for the young quarterback.
Carolina Panthers at Atlanta Falcons.
Falcons favored by 3 at home. The Falcons have won back-to-back games. The Panthers have lost 4 in a row, and suddenly now this is a battle for last place, and the Panthers are the underdogs to Atlanta. This is an opportunity where you try to buy a stock at its lowest price. The Panthers, as a dog on the road like that, you just count on the fact that they can't lose 5 in a row. But it's hard to count on Sam Darnold with the way he's played. And look, Christian McCaffrey's a big loss, but if you were drafted in the top 5, you can't be completely reliant on a star running back. That's an indictment on you as the quarterback. Sam Darnold needs to play well. Tua just lit up the Falcons through the air. That's where they're vulnerable. Can Darnold make some plays? On the flip side, the Panthers, their defense statistically is still been pretty good this year. And so for Atlanta, we've talked about this yesterday with Paul Charchian. The Panthers are a tough matchup for Kyle Pitts. They could be a tough matchup for the Falcons' run game. We'll see what Atlanta does offensively at home against the Panthers. But this has become a big-time game because it's a battle for last place, and the Panthers are trying to avoid what would be a fifth straight loss.
Cincinnati Bengals at New York Jets.
For the Jets, this is the perfect example of really what's been malpracticed by this organization. All right, so they draft Zach Wilson, good and well. But what they give him is a first-time head coach and a first-time offensive coordinator. That doesn't help. But what this game also shows is the backup quarterback spot. When you bring in a young quarterback, right, you draft an Aaron Rodgers, well, you got a Brett Favre for him to learn from. Pat Mahomes, Alex Smith, even Tom Brady, Drew Bledsoe. Right, when you bring in a young quarterback, whether they're going to play right away or not, at least Justin Fields, he has Nick Foles and Andy Dalton in that room. For the Jets, they have Mike White. Right? They don't have a veteran quarterback. They had to go out and trade for Joe Flacco this week, and Flacco doesn't even want to play. He said, I'll be there this weekend. They traded for him back on like Tuesday. Flacco hasn't even reported to the team yet. So the Jets are a mess, and this is the perfect example. Right, a terrible plan this year. You're going to give a rookie quarterback, a first-time head coach and offensive coordinator, and a young backup as well. No veteran quarterback. Now they have to rely on Mike White Sunday against the 5-2 Bengals. The Bengals are 11-point favorites on the road. This is going to be one of the – this is a one game. There's a couple of games that you can skip on Sunday. This is certainly one of them. This should be a bore fest.
Tennessee Titans at Indianapolis Colts.
I like the Colts in this spot. They've been on the road for the last 5 weeks, so now they come home. This line has moved a lot, by the way, if you look at the spreads. The Colts are now favored by 2.5. They were the underdogs earlier this week. In fact, just a couple of days ago. But I like the Colts at home. I think this is a good matchup for them. Now, they did lose to the Titans earlier this year, but for the Colts, they have a good run defense. That's the Titans' strength on offense. And the Colts have a really good rushing attack. That's the Titans' weakness on defense. So I think this is a good matchup for the Colts at home. Carson Wentz has only one interception this year. He's been playing well, 13th in the league in QBR. And for the Titans I'm still unsure about. They lost to the Jets, and I know it's a week-to-week business, right? But they lost to the Jets, and then they beat the Chiefs and the Bills the last 2 weeks. Two really good wins for the Titans, but 2 weeks don't make a season. It was over a 7-day stretch. Don't suddenly believe that now that they're 5-2 with those two wins that this is one of the best teams in the AFC. I'm still not buying them at that level. I think they lose to the Colts on Sunday, get a little bit of a reality check. And for the Colts, this is their season. If the Colts lose this game, because of the tiebreaker, they'll be three games out of first place. The Titans would pretty much have the division wrapped up here by the midseason point. So the Colts need this game more. They're at home. I think the Colts win. They've been playing better football lately. I think they win the game, and they make the AFC South a little more interesting.
San Francisco 49ers at Chicago Bears.
So the Niners are four-point favorites in Chicago. For the Bears, for Justin Fields, you got if he's going to be the starting quarterback, both these teams, you got to show me a little something out of the quarterback. It's interesting. These are two teams that are led by offensive coaches, first-time head coaches, young guys, and yet you look at the teams this year, their offenses have been bad. Justin Fields has been a disaster, but on the other side for San Francisco, their offense has not been good either. And I talked about this earlier. Kyle Shanahan, he's finally starting to get a little heat, but for some reason, he's been Teflon, where we talk about this great offensive mind. He comes from the Shanahan family. Oh, he's fine. He, outside of that one season, has lost two-thirds of his games. They go to Chicago. You're favored by four on the road. I think this is a little bit of a trap for San Francisco. I think the Bears win this game at home. But for San Francisco, you're already 2-4. You're in last place. This is a must-win for the Niners. And for Chicago, at home, you got to see something out of Justin Fields, something to make you believe. That's what you need. He has been terrible. Hopefully he bounces back at home. Last week was a bad matchup against Tampa. You hope he's better at home against the Niners.
Philadelphia Eagles at Detroit Lions.
I was wrong a couple of weeks ago when I predicted the Lions would get their first win against the Bengals. So I'm going to double down and predict it this weekend. I think the Lions at home on Sunday get their first win. The Eagles were really disappointing for me last week against the Raiders. They're now 2-5. I have flip-flopped. At first, I thought they were going to be one of the worst teams in the league. Then I watched them in September, and I thought, actually, this team could be somewhat competitive this year. Then I watched them in October, and I thought, no, I was right the first time. This is a bad team. Jalen Hurts is probably playing for his job. He has gotten worse as the year has gone on, and the Lions play really hard. And they're at home, and they almost beat the Rams last week. And they may not be the most talented team, but they're going to try. I think the Lions get their first win of the season on Sunday against the Eagles.
Los Angeles Rams at Houston Texans.
Another game you can skip. The Rams are 6-1, Texans 1-6. The Rams are favored by 16 on the road. Good teams take care of the layups. This is a layup for the Rams. They didn't cover the big spread against the Lions last week. That was closer than it should have been. Just win the game, though. They should blow out the Texans, but just win on the road. That's all you got to do, and they should easily against Houston. You got one of the best teams in the league against one of the worst.
New England Patriots at Los Angeles Chargers.
Remember, the Patriots blew out the Chargers last year. It really sealed the fate of Anthony Lynn, who lost his head coaching job there with the Chargers. That was Justin Herbert as a rookie. We know Belichick's really good against rookies. Well, now Herbert is a sophomore and is having a really good year. And you go out to L.A., the Patriots, their three wins this year have come against rookie quarterbacks. Can they beat somebody who's not overwhelmed as a rookie against Bill Belichick? There's a reason why the Chargers are favored by 5 in this game. And the Chargers are coming off a bye as well. So this is a chance for Herbert to get a little revenge. Let's see how much he's grown. Last year he played terrible against Belichick. Now you're in a better spot. You're a better team. You get them coming to your building. Let's see how Herbert does on Sunday with an extra week to get ready for Belichick here in the second go-round.
Jacksonville Jaguars at Seattle Seahawks.
I like the Jags on the road. 3.5-point underdog. The Seahawks have one more win than them this season, but they also now don't have their starting quarterback, and the Seahawks are winless at home this year. I like Jacksonville in this spot. The Jags are coming off a bye. They have an extra week to get ready. And for maybe the first time, I shouldn't say the first time they play the Texans week one, but for one of the few times, they have the quarterback advantage. I would take Trevor Lawrence over Geno Smith. So I think Jacksonville can go into Seattle and win this game coming off a bye. Trevor Lawrence has been playing better the last couple of weeks. And for Geno Smith and the Seahawks, they're in last place. They've lost 3 in a row. They've been close losses with Geno. You got to find a way to win some games if you want to try to hang around until Russell Wilson comes back for the Seahawks there in the NFC.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers at New Orleans Saints.
I mentioned this one earlier, but this is where Brady has really struggled. Lost both games to the Saints last year. They got blown out in New Orleans. Now with an offseason, let's see how he does against this defense on Sunday. The Bucs are 5-point favorites on the road in New Orleans. That rarely happens to the Saints. We'll see if Brady can put together a better performance this time around against this defense after they were his kryptonite a year ago.
Washington football team at Denver Broncos.
Vic Fangio continues to coach for his job. They started 3-0. They've now lost 4 in a row in Denver. They're at home against a bad Washington football team. You got to end that losing streak and get a win here. Plus, you have extra time to get ready. You played on Thursday Night Football. You have more time. This is a must-win for Fangio and the Broncos. I said it last week. I'll say it again. We keep going as long as the Broncos lose. If they lose this game at home to the Washington football team with extra time to get ready, fifth straight loss, I wouldn't want to be Vic Fangio trying to come into work Monday morning. I'll say that. The Broncos, this is a must win to try to keep up in that division.
Dallas Cowboys at Minnesota Vikings.
I think this is a really interesting Sunday night game. Now, I thought, no way does Dak not play. Then I started to read into it a little bit more the last 12 hours, and maybe he doesn't. Now, I'll say this. If Dak Prescott is actually injured, if I'm the Cowboys, you're already 5-1. You're in a terrible division. It's worth it to sacrifice 1 week for the rest of the season. So if there's any concern about that injury, and yes, I do say this as a Vikings fan, you know, would prefer to face the backup. But if I'm the Cowboys, I think it is the smart move. You sit down Dak Prescott. I would find it hard to believe he doesn't play, but maybe he is more injured than I even thought. Coming off a bye week, not a good sign when he's still, after a bye week, not a participant in practice these last couple of days, just doing some things on the side. That's not a good sign. In the actual game itself, the Cowboys are very reliant on turnovers. They give up a lot of yards, and Kirk Cousins has been playing well this year, knock on wood. If you take care of the football at home, the Vikings, I think, could be okay. Mike Zimmer, as a home underdog, he's 70% against the number. The Vikings were an underdog. After the news of Prescott, they've gone from a 3-point dog to a 3-point favorite, which is crazy to see the line move so much. The Vikings are now favored at home Sunday Night Football. I think it'll be a wild environment. But Zimmer, 2 weeks to prepare for this offense. Maybe no Dak Prescott. I think it's a fascinating game on Sunday Night Football.
New York Giants at Kansas City Chiefs.
This is the Monday Night Football game. The Chiefs at home against the Giants. For the Chiefs, this is a get-right game. You're favored by 10. You get a little extra time to prepare. Hopefully Mahomes is good to go. He's 100%. You get a banged-up Giants team coming to your building. This is a chance to the Chiefs. They're 3-4. They've been a disaster this year. If you lose Monday night somehow to the Giants, then we have real concerns. This is a must-win and an opportunity to get right and start feeling a little good about yourself on Monday Night Football against the Giants. We'll talk more about that, though, on Monday. And there you go. We got through it quicker this time, previewing the games in Week 8 of the NFL season. When we come back, we'll try to link up with somebody who covers Florida State to take another look at that game tomorrow, Florida State and Clemson. We got the theme song to, what, the fourth Nightmare on Elm Street movie?
That's right, the Dream Master. This is Vinnie Vincent Invasion, which eventually morphed into Slaughter. Oh. Yes, it's the same Vinnie Vincent who was in Kiss with Love Kills.
There you go. We'll catch up with somebody from Florida State side of things when we come back to look ahead to that game tomorrow. It's the Tomorrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Getting ready for Halloween this weekend and a great weekend of football as well, including Clemson and Florida State tomorrow, where Clemson is favored by only single digits at home against Florida State, trying to push their winning streak or continue their winning streak against Florida State. Joining us now to break down tomorrow's opponent for the Tigers is Andre Fernandez, who covers Florida State for the Tallahassee Democrat. He's on Twitter at Fernandez Andre C, and he's with us now. Andre, good afternoon. How are you?
Good. How are you doing? Well,
doing well. Appreciate the time. Florida State, I know they got off to the slow start. They lost to Jacksonville State. People stopped paying attention. But in recent weeks, they've been playing better here in October, three straight victories. What's been the biggest difference for Florida State here this month compared to last month?
I think just, you know, limiting errors better than they were early on in the season, and then also the emergence of Jordan Travis, a quarterback. I mean, at the beginning of the year, this is a team that really just, you know, got off to terrible starts and, you know, compounded their issues with a lot of penalties, a lot of turnovers, didn't seem to get any kind of consistency on offense at all, and they were switching quarterbacks between him and Mackenzie Milton, sometimes because of injuries, too, that Travis was hurt early in the year. But since he came back in that Syracuse game, you know, they've had the running game going for most of the season, But really, when he came in, they were able to kind of balance the offense a little bit better. I mean, he fits the best in terms of just adding to the running game. And really, I think it's just, like I said before, just the mistakes, because or less of them, because they've been one of the fewer penalized teams in recent weeks. After the first four games, they were one of the worst teams in the country to do that. And it's really just helped a young, you know, overall team, a lot of inexperience still on the roster, but they've been able to overcome that and really play some more consistent football and start to show some results.
Yeah, so with that said, Clemson, obviously this is not the same Clemson team from the last few years, but they still do have a good defense. They are at home where they're tough. So how do you like this matchup for Florida State to try to continue those good things offensively? You know, they've scored over 30 points three straight weeks. Do you think Florida State can continue to have that offensive success tomorrow going up against this Clemson defense?
Well, it's going to be really difficult because, yeah, like you said, there's still Clemson may have trouble on offense, but the defense is still one of the best in the country. I mean, one of the impressive parts is the way they're just so good in the red zone when teams actually do get in the red zone. And that's the whole thing. FSU is going to have to capitalize if they get some chances to make any big plays, which they're probably not going to get too many of them. And that's been the game that they did was against North Carolina. And that's why it looks like such a lopsided victory, because they finally did hit on some of those big plays, especially in the passing game. But when you look at that defense, I mean, they still can rush the quarterback really well. They're still the better team, Clemson, the better team at forcing turnovers. And that's the whole thing. If they get off to another bad start, FSU does, and, you know, let that defense either make a play, score some points either directly or set up short fields for the offense, it's going to be a long day for them. So this is definitely, I think, the toughest defense by far that they've faced all year. So it's going to be up to them to keep some of those positive elements going like they have, especially the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, so on the other side of things, you know, Clemson, we've been waiting for this offense to break out. DJ gets benched last week. They haven't scored over 20 points in regulation against any Power 5 school yet this year. So how has Florida State been on defense as Clemson fans? You know, they're waiting to see, when is this offense finally going to do something? As we look at tomorrow's matchup, could this be an opportunity? How has Florida State's defense been so far this year?
Well, defensively, I think what they've been a lot better at is rushing the quarterback, because last year, you know, they only had 10 sacks the entire season, and now they've got 19 through these games. And a lot of that was Jermaine Johnson, the kid who transferred in, the defensive end they transferred in from Georgia. He's made a huge difference in terms of being able to put pressure on someone and disrupt a lot of passing games. So, I mean, if they can get him loose and create some havoc back there, but it's, again, whether it's DJ or whether it's Tyson, it's two mobile quarterbacks. And that's something that's been a problem for FSU on the defensive side of the ball. They haven't been that bad against opposing teams' running games overall. They give up yardage, but not huge plays. The huge plays have actually come on the ground when quarterbacks have been able to break loose and make big runs. And that's the whole thing that Coach Norvell and those guys have been kind of warning this week, like saying, just be aware, no matter who starts for Clemson, they have to account for a guy that's back there that can make plays both with his arm and with his feet.
What do you think happens tomorrow? You'll be there covering it. Florida State only a 9.5-point dog at Clemson. What do you think actually happens when they take the field, play the game? Do you think Florida State could come into Clemson and win this one tomorrow? What do you see as the outcome tomorrow?
Yeah, it's funny when you say only 9.5 compared to the way it was. I mean, a few weeks ago, they thought they'd have no chance at all. But, yeah, I mean, they definitely would have a chance just because of the way that it's gone the last few weeks and the way Clemson has struggled. But, I mean, I think looking at it, it's still an environment, really, is what I'm looking at. I mean, going there to Death Valley, it's always hard. And for this team, they really haven't experienced the kind of hostile environment they will in tomorrow's game. And that's what makes me wonder, are they going to execute in high-pressure moments, or are they going to have issues, and are they going to have some disruption like they had before? Is this going to lead to a lot of mistakes? So I could see them keeping it close, but I'm still not convinced that they can pull it off just because of those factors. But we'll see. I think at the very least they do have a way more realistic chance than they did a few weeks ago when they were struggling big time.
Yeah, certainly. We'll let you get out of here on this one. You've probably already mentioned it in our conversation, but what do you think is the biggest factor in this game? If Florida State does win, or if they want to go there, play well, what is the top priority for this game against Clemson?
I mean, I think it's going back to the turnovers. I think it's protecting the football. I mean, because they're not – it's a defense for FSU that can limit opposing offenses, but they're not really great at creating some. I think this is the type of game where they have to do that. and they and their receivers really have to win one-on-one matchups as well. I think aside from the turnover battle, I think that this is a situation where, like I was saying before, if they do have a chance to make big plays, their receivers aren't really one of the best groups in the conference if you rate them just on paper on talent-wise, but they've been better. They've been a little more consistent recently, and if the opportunity is there to cash in on a couple of big plays, it has to happen. So, and again, they just can't let Clemson's defense just feast and start to turn it into a lopsided game early.
He's Andre Fernandez, covers Florida State for the Tallahassee Democrat, and he's on Twitter at FernandezAndreC. Read his work to get ready for the game tomorrow and learn about the opponent. Andre, appreciate the time. Safe travels, and enjoy that one tomorrow.
Thank you very much, and thanks for having me.
Hey, pleasure's all ours. Appreciate it. Andre Fernandez giving us the lowdown on Florida State, Clemson's opponent, tomorrow with a 3:30 kick. We'll wrap up your Football Friday when we come back as we get ready for Halloween. I'll sneak in my picks. Meant to get to them earlier, but we've had a lot of things to get to. So I'll give you a couple of picks before we go and try to have another winning week. We'll wrap up your Friday when we return. Oh, what is this, a little witchy woman?
Yeah, you're a Seinfeld guy, and it fits.
That's right. Yeah. Great episode. We'll wrap up your Friday when we come back. I'll give you my game picks for the weekend. I almost got put into a trance now because of the song. We'll wrap things up next. It's the Mar Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Welcome to the place where all the creatures meet. The last building to your left on the dead end street. You find skeleton bones outside in the pavement and torture chambers down.
What a funky finish to your Friday afternoon here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Made it Football Friday, getting ready for Halloween, as Joe said. You didn't have to even revert to Thriller. We had all sorts of other classics for you to add to your Halloween playlist. A day like this, when there's so much to get to, I didn't even get to everything that I wanted to. You always feel like you're playing catch-up. You feel like you're running. So before we go, let me quickly give you my picks for the weekend. Usually we spend more time on this, but we're short on time, so I'll just pass them on. This year, we're at 58% on the picks, 57-42. Got Thursday night football last night. Last week, last Friday on the picks, went 7-2, 15-2 in the last 17 picks handed out on the show. We're going to try to keep it rolling. A lot of these numbers have changed in the last 48 hours that they're not as good, but I'm going to stick with my guns and take them anyways. We're going to go with Florida State, 9.5-point dog against Clemson. That number is still way too large. Clemson doesn't have the offense to run away from anybody these days. I don't know why they continue to be such a heavy favorite. Florida State, 9.5. I think Clemson wins, but they're in for another dogfight. I'll take BC, plus 6.5 against Syracuse. Syracuse is similar. They play nothing but field goal games. They don't run away from anybody either. And I always like the value of backup quarterbacks like Boston College. I'm going to roll with Auburn. This number's gone up. I'm still going to take it. Auburn, -3 against Ole Miss tomorrow night. I think they win at home. That's a tough spot for Ole Miss to come into. And I'll take Michigan State. This number's come down, but I'm still going to take Michigan State +4 against Michigan. I think those are two pretty even teams. And in the NFL, give me the Panthers +3 against the Falcons. Buying that stock low. I'll take the Lions +3.5 against the Eagles. I think the Lions get their first win of the year. The number's gone up, but I'm still going to take the Colts at home, -2.5 against the Titans. I think they win the game, cover the 2.5. And lastly, we're going back to the Jaguars. 3.5-point dog on the road against Geno Smith with 2 weeks to prepare. Give me the Jags. There's our picks for the weekend. Florida State, Boston College, Auburn, Michigan State, Panthers, Lions, Colts, Jaguars. You can find them on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcast. Life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we have to say goodbye. We'll say hello again Monday at noon. Enjoy Halloween. Tomorrow, Midday Show on ESPN Radio.